But we have some a number of things, a host of things to get to tonight. 216-474-0092. If you want to get involved in the show, it's Spencer German. I will be with you up until 11 o'clock tonight. And we will cover a lot of bases in that time frame together, including catching up with our Browns insider, Darryl Ryder, who is live over at Rocky Mortgage Fieldhouse for the Cavs game, which we will also talk about a little bit tonight as well. Plenty of things to touch on, and only so much time to do it. And where I want to start off, because, listen, from the game last night, which I am not overly angry about the results, which I think is kind of the general consensus from everybody who watched the game, who followed the game, who woke up this morning and saw the score of the game. It was like, hey, they made it fun. That was one of the more enjoyable losses I think I've ever seen from the Cleveland Browns in terms of making for an entertaining night and an entertaining product, but at the same time, coming up short and losing. And usually we're so conditioned to just being mad about these losses. I didn't feel so mad about that one. There was reasons to feel like, okay, it's all good. It's, you know, like, life goes on and we're seeing some progress here. And I think one of the big takeaways that people had, one of the big things that felt like people were sort of, one of the biggest talking points maybe on social media, which I understand isn't always the best barometer for what's actually, how people are actually feeling. But I did think like one of the big talking points from last night was how efficient the offense continues to look with Jameis Winston. And the idea that if they had just started him sooner, maybe we would be talking about a team that was in the thick of the playoff hunt and still showing up on the graphic on games during games, rather than a team that obviously, was, you know, doing what it was doing early in the season with Deshaun Watson and not, you know, had an inept offense and all these different things. But I'm gonna be honest, like, my mind went somewhere else first. I'm not saying that's a wrong thought to have. I'm not even saying that that's not like 100% what one of your main takeaways should be from that game last night. Anybody who felt that way, totally understand it. And I think it is probably the right way to feel in a moment like that, given how Jameis played almost 500 yards, sets the franchise record for yards in a game passing. Like, lot of good to take away from Jameis on top of the bad, which we will talk about later in the show in regards to the roller coaster ride that we know is Jameis Winston. But the biggest thing that I learned about this Browns team last night isn't about the quarterback. It isn't about the offensive line. It isn't about the defense. It isn't about Kevin Stefanski. It isn't about the overarching talking points that will sort of dominate the news cycle come offseason time. It is about one position and one position only, and that is the wide receiver position. Because I tell you, like, we spent so much time wondering about the wide receiver room and what this group is going to look like. And we spent so much time being critical, obviously, of Andrew Berry for his inability to draft and develop wide receivers through the draft. I think there's reasons for that. But I also think that he has nailed a number of wide receiver trades that he's made throughout his tenure here in Cleveland. And Jerry Jeudy putting on the show he did last night and giving you the numbers that he's given you the last couple weeks with a competent quarterback under center, it tells me that like they bet on Jeudy to perform at a level, and they saw something there that they thought was going to be valuable to them in terms of, you know, proving he could be a top receiver in this league. And they were banking on like that first round potential shining through in a new setting, in a new offense, and all these different things. And that largely is going to come to fruition, or has come to fruition. So they do deserve some credit for that. And I am blown away by how much Jerry Jeudy has broken out. Like, as we get ready to venture into the winter cold months of what the wide receiver room looks like, and what this team's needs are in relation to that position specifically, but others, and what they might do with the first round, their first round pick that they finally have for the first time in 4 years in the draft. Like, I walked away from last night feeling like, you know what? With each passing week that we see Jerry Jeudy do what he's doing, I feel more and more comfortable with wide receiver dropping down the priority list for this team. That might sound crazy to some people because, and I was talking about this a little bit earlier today with somebody, like, I think there's still some jadedness with Judy because of the Denver numbers, because guys like Mark Schlereth and Steve Smith are calling him out for being lazy and saying he's a bust because he was a number 10 overall pick and he hasn't met those expectations yet. Like, all those things can be true. And all those things could have played out during his time in Denver. But at the same time, it feels like he's blossoming in front of us and that the Browns really found something here. And so, given the way he's played, I feel more and more comfortable pushing wide receiver down the list of needs that this team has going into the offseason. I think there was, when they made the Amari Cooper trade with the Bills back in October, I think there was a lot of questions just in general about, like, okay, what does this wide receiver room look like without Amari Cooper? And I mean, these questions even extend into the lead up to the season, the summer months, where contract negotiations were at a standstill. The Browns didn't really want to extend him and give him some massive dollars and money because they felt like they didn't want to pay a wide receiver going into his age 30 season and whatnot. And I understand all those things. I also, though, feel like they felt like in their heart of hearts, if they didn't have Amari Cooper, that Jerry Jeudy was still going to give them what they were looking for at that position, and that's now come to fruition. And so I'm sitting here now, and my opinion's on, like, okay, a top-flight receiver is still something that they're going to have to get in the offseason, and it was probably going to be hard to do that in free agency given the salary cap restrictions they're going to have because of the Deshaun Watson deal. They're probably going to have trouble with that. Going through that route to get to that position. But I thought maybe the NFL draft is a place where you pluck a guy and you add him in and you find, like, a top flight guy. Now, I don't know that this wide receiver class is like some of the previous classes, like this past one, for example, where you have Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers at the top of it. But it still is, there's still going to be some names out there. But the more and more I see Jerry Jeudy put up the numbers, number one in receiving yards since week 8 when Jameis Winston took over the offense. Most yards put up by a player against their former team in a revenge game sort of situation. He's now the third Browns wide receiver to put up over 200 yards in a game. Josh Gordon did it twice, so it's only three players who've ever done it. Like, he entered rarefied air for this organization last night, and he's well on his way towards doing the thing that everybody was sort of skittish on when they traded for him in the first place, which was, well, he's never had a 1,000-yard season. Well, guess what? He's going to have a 1,000-yard season when this is all said and done, because he is going to, he's only about 100 and I think like 40 yards shy of achieving that. And so he's going to get there, I would say, in the next couple weeks. And that's why, like, the rest of this season for me, as we talked weeks ago about, like, evaluating the roster and who's going to be here long-term and who's not, the rest of this season for me is truly about a player like Jerry Jeudy. Can he be your number one for real? Can he keep on the trend that he is on and make you feel like that position's pretty stable in the grand scheme of things, to the point where you don't necessarily need to go big game hunting in order to, you know, go and swing big on a wide receiver? Like, if we find out by the end of this year that Jerry Jeudy can be that guy, and I certainly feel that way at this point. This is the big thing that I've learned about this team the last couple weeks, and last night in a game against the Broncos that didn't go their way, but that obviously was a fireworks show, if you will. The thing that I've learned is that this team has a number one wide receiver in their midst right now. And so it gives you the chance to drop that down the priority list. I'm not saying they don't need a wide receiver. I want to make that very, very clear. Because I do think there's still room to add to that group. I don't know what the future holds for Elijah Moore, but he's also looked a lot better with Jameis Winston, to the point where maybe you talk yourself into, okay, maybe we bring him back as well on some sort of short-term deal. But I do think that you're going to get, I think the Browns are going to set themselves up to make Jerry Jeudy their number one wide receiver, and then supplement the rest of the wide receiver depth chart through free agency in the draft, and not have to like go get the big name in the draft or in free agency to bolster that room because they feel good about where they're at with Jerry Jeudy. Or maybe they make a trade. But it's basically you're looking for a wide receiver in a supporting role rather than a wide receiver in a starting role. And I think that's the big distinction here because Jerry Jeudy has been brilliant. And I can't say enough about the performance last night. You know, sometimes you go into these games where revenge is in play and it just ends up being a big letdown. Like it feels just like it's lackluster. You don't get the fireworks you were hoping for from the player and it just kind of goes unnoticed. Not last night. Like Jerry Jeudy came with a purpose. The Browns certainly made a point in trying to get him the ball and get him involved. I mean, the first play of the game that they run from scrimmage, 44-yard reception for Jerry. And he had another opportunity to score another big touchdown if Jameis Winston hadn't overthrown him. So, like, lived up to the hype. And the numbers speak for themselves these last couple weeks. I'm in the camp right now that the Browns have a number one wide receiver. It's the biggest thing I've learned about this group as we start to evaluate the roster and where it's at. So much so that I think wide receiver isn't necessarily, like, I'm changing my priorities around with this team as they go into the offseason. Quarterback is probably still your number one because it's the most important position on the field. But beyond that, like, left tackle, rising up my board by the day. Like, these were all kind of lumped together, but we're getting clarity on that now because of what Jerry Jeudy has provided. Do you believe that Jerry Jeudy is the number one wide receiver the Browns need? We will talk about it some more with you here coming up throughout the show and throughout the night. When we get back, though, the college football playoff, the new version of it, has officially been revealed. How far did Ohio State fall? What would their first-round matchup look like? We'll detail all those things and react to it with you when we get back on 92.3 The Fan. The game in almost real time, several hours after the fact, over with the Sons of the Shoe podcast, 92.3 The Fan YouTube channel, in the Odyssey app, also wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, etc. And yeah, I had a couple different rants. I feel bad. I really steamrolled Jake, so I'm going to concede the floor to him on our midweek episode, which should drop tomorrow. But we'll have a lot to discuss on that episode because we know where the Buckeyes now fit into the standings at the moment, knowing that they don't play this weekend in the Big Ten championship game. I actually do think there's kind of a silver lining in this, though, for the Buckeyes. I'll explain that here coming up. But if you didn't see it in real time, your college football playoff rankings officially out. And Ohio State, as Anthony alluded to, dropped to number 8 in the rankings. They dropped to number 6 in the rankings, but they're the 8 seed in the bracket that obviously forms from once you give the automatic buys to the conference, the top conference winners, the top ranked conference winners, and then you sort of fill in the gaps from there. And so as the 8 seed in the bracket, that would put them in a matchup head-to-head at home at the Shoe against the Tennessee Volunteers coming to town that first week of the playoff, which would be that weekend before Christmas. So they have an opportunity to really spoil your Christmas if they potentially play that weekend and lose at home to Tennessee. Which, by the way, Tennessee, one thing I love about the way this bracket sets up, by the way, your top 5 now is Oregon, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, and Georgia. Nothing crazy with obviously Ohio State dropping to 6. Tennessee 7, SMU 8, Indiana 9, Boise State 10, Bama 11, Miami 12. And Bama gets in right now in this current iteration of the bracket as the 11 seed. Arizona State is your 12 seed as the lowest ranked potential conference winner out of the Big 12. And that's the biggest thing now for Ohio State. is that I think no matter what, whether it was going to be Ohio State or whether it was going to be Penn State like it is, I think the Big Ten loser on Saturday is basically guaranteed the 5 seed. I don't think, because if you think about it, like, the next closest team, if Penn State loses to Oregon, is Notre Dame. But are you really going to reward Notre Dame for having a bye week and not playing in an extra conference championship game that they would never play in, and punish Penn State if they lose to Oregan for losing that conference championship game? Like, you earn a spot in the conference championship game and you lose. So I think no matter what, whether it's Penn State that loses or Oregon that loses, I'm sort of assuming Oregon's going to win. I think that team goes to the 5 seed in the tournament no matter what. And so that means Penn State, again, assuming a loss to Oregon, would have the easiest, the thing we kept talking about, right? Like, would you rather have the bye or the easier path to the semifinals? And Penn State would have that then, being the 5 seed, because the way it sets up right now, your draw is Arizona State and then Boise State after that. Now, I'm not saying either of those teams are slouches. I think Boise State especially is not a team to be taken lightly. You don't want to trifle with Boise State. But that was the route that we sort of talked about. Okay, Ohio State, if they get to the Big Ten Championship game, even if they lose again, you're set up now to have an easier path to the semifinals. You get a home game against like an Arizona State team, fine, whatever, and you just kind of go from there. But now Ohio State's path gets a lot harder because you play Tennessee in the first round, and then your next matchup, assuming things hold form and Oregon wins, would be against the Oregon Ducks. Now, I'll give you why I think that actually there's maybe a positive in that for the Buckeyes. But what I will say about this new setup of the turn of the bracket, the thing that I love the most is that they avoided pairing any teams from like the same conference with each other in the first round. And that is the whole, like, there's no bigger point for this 12-team bracket and this 12-team playoff than having teams from opposing conferences play each other. Like, we all go on these long, we get into these long drawn-out arguments on social media about, well, the SEC is better than the Big Ten, and which conference is really the best, and everyone has this, everyone thinks there's this SEC bias that exists. Okay, well, based off this current bracket, the way it's set up right now, you get Big Ten team versus SEC team. Tennessee versus Ohio State. Indiana versus Georgia. You also get Bama versus Notre Dame. And you get Penn State versus Arizona State. Like, no Big Ten overlap with four teams in. No SEC overlap with four teams in. That is, to me, chef's kiss, beautiful. That is what we want. That is what we all wanted out of the 12-team playoff, was let the teams decide it on the field. None of this, like, well, we think this team's better because resume, and they played in the SEC, and so they're going to get in over this team. No, you earned a spot, you're in. Now you get to go prove if the SEC really is better than the Big Ten. All right, so Tennessee comes to Ohio State, and you decide it on the field. That is the best part about the way that this is currently set up, and assuming that some of this stuff sort of holds true and holds form, that is likely what we're going to get in the first round of this tournament, which is fantastic to see. Now, the biggest shakeup could come if Georgia beats Texas. I guess if Oregon beats Penn State, but like I said, I think Oregon or Penn State, the loser goes to the 5 spot. But if Georgia beats Texas for a second time, Georgia is going to be your team with a bye. And so then Texas drops out, and you wonder where, like, they kind of fall in the order as you sort through the other seeds. Also, the other big shakeup could be if Clemson beats SMU, do two ACC teams get in? But Miami's out after this loss to Syracuse this weekend. And Bama's on the fringe, but they look like, because they're in with this iteration, I'm assuming they're going to get in the final version of it as well. So there you go. That's how it all shakes out. I love the way it sets up. It's a beautiful thing, and it's what we wanted out of a 12-team playoff. Now, the reason I actually think this could be a benefit to Ohio State on some level, which I get it. This is me putting on my scarlet and gray colored glasses and trying to, like, paint over what was just a disastrous effort on Saturday. But, okay, yeah, you draw Tennessee in the first round. That's not fun. You draw Oregon in the second round. That's not fun. But because you're not playing that second game against Oregon, that was a 1-point game in their house when you played earlier this year. And I understand the teams are different now. Injuries have plagued Ohio State's offensive line. There's different things kind of in play here. But if you had some special things kind of planned for a rematch against them in the Big Ten championship game, now you kind of get a chance to save it. Like, there's the, you have some cards to still play, and the idea of like kind of pinballing back and forth between these two teams, like Ohio State lost the first meeting. I was kind of envisioning Ohio State would maybe win in the Big Ten championship game, and then you got to try to beat them twice. Like, the idea of beating a team twice is really hard. So it kind of puts the onus on Oregon to have to pull that feat off and not it being like a split down the middle and then a rubber match to decide who was the better team this year in the playoff if they had played two times leading up to that. So I kind of like the idea of A, drawing Oregon earlier and getting them out of the way because you're going to have to play them at some point. I'm assuming that a championship run goes through Oregon because that team's been great this year. So you're going to have to play them at some point. Why not get them in the second round and get it out of the way and have some of those things that maybe you save for this time of year up your sleeve to use against them without having thrown everything, including the kitchen sink at them in a potential Big Ten title situation. That's the one silver lining I'll try to give you in relation to the Buckeyes after their loss to Michigan this weekend. We go to the phones and Jake Volnick, my co-host on Sons of the Shoe, wants to chime in. This is actually a smart move by you, Jake, because we don't get to react to this in real time. We were going to have our conversation on this tomorrow, but now we get a chance to actually react in real time because you decided to call in. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, what better time to jump in than right now? We get him right
you
here.
You had nothing better to do on a Tuesday night in December, so you were like, I'll just call him with Spencer. We'll chop it up about the college football playoff. Why not?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I'm driving home. I hear you. Ohio State rankings come out. Seems like a great opportunity to get in the thoughts. By the way, chef's kiss, the perfect way to describe it. SEC, Big Ten, give me all the matchups, no overlap. Yeah. If it stays like that, oh, perfect. Perfect, Spencer. It doesn't get any better. Let the SEC bias die in perfect nature right then and there.
Yeah, and like I said, this is exactly what you want. You want to see the teams from different conferences squaring off against each other to sort of settle once and for all, like, okay, The whole point of this, and I'm gonna be honest, like I'm about to go here. I'll let you finish what you want to say about the setup right now because I have a rant to go on the other side of the break because I've heard a lot of people just talking about like who deserves to be in and whatnot, and I think it's kind of BS. But continue with what you were gonna say.
No, I love that Ohio State. I think fell basically both where we sort of expected them to.
Yeah,
and the 8 seed in the playoffs, 6 seed overall. We'll see how it shakes up after the conference championships. But right now, hosting a home game, which I think might be best-case scenario for them.
Do you like a matchup with Tennessee, or are you nervous about a matchup with Tennessee?
Oh, give me Tennessee. Not nervous.
Wow.
Get a Tennessee
panic
meter?
Give me Tennessee. He's pulling out the give me the Yankees like Ken did, the bring on the Knicks like I did. He's going full bring me Tennessee. I like
it. Bring me Tennessee. Not afraid. Wow. Not afraid. I won't go too deep into it because if people want to hear my full thoughts, they should tune into Sons of the Shoe tomorrow.
That is a good way to find what we're gonna how we feel about this. The only other thing I was gonna ask you is, did you like my spin into Ohio State drawing Oregon a little bit earlier on?
Yeah, I think it's probably a better matchup, not with the Big Ten championship. You get to save a little bit. I think you're better off there, but I think your best case scenario is just avoiding Oregon altogether. I just think you don't want to play them.
I don't think that's going to happen at this point. We'll talk about this more tomorrow, Jake. But based off like how this is set up right now, and there's only so many things that can change with it, like I think Ohio State's kind of locked into where they're at. So we will have more thoughts for you tomorrow when the next episode of Sons of the Shoe drops. Jake, we need to build on the momentum we have because I can tell you definitively we are the most watched video on the 92.3 The Fan YouTube channel as of today when I last checked, given our emphatic reactions, or really so more so my emphatic reaction that I kind of stole the floor from you in our live version of the post-game show on Saturday. So
yeah.
Congratulations to us.
Yeah, we're doing great. Pat on the back. It's never a bad idea. To avoid the self-pat on the back, Spencer, I'll pat yours, you pat mine, we'll be good. People know how to make sure they go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, 92.3 The Fan YouTube channel, wherever. We don't care where you listen to it, where you watch it. Just get on one of them.
That right there is how you do a plug. Well done, Jake.
Have a good one, Spencer.
Take it easy, my man. Thank you for calling in. Jake Volnick, my co-host on Sons of the Shoe. As he alluded to, we'll have more in-depth thoughts on the setup of the playoff when we give you our next version of the podcast tomorrow. It'll drop probably sometime late morning, afternoonish. So we will see what time. We'll let you know. But you can find more conversations like that tomorrow when we get back in relation to the college football playoff. I keep hearing all these people talk about teams that aren't deserving, and I don't understand what you want. We'll talk about it next here on 92 Through the Fan. Because they're not playing in the conference championship. A team like Tennessee even stuck where they're at because they're not playing in a conference championship. So in order for them to move up, you would need the committee to, if Penn State loses, to consider that like enough to put them below Ohio State again. Or you need Georgia to take a third loss and then maybe they drop below Ohio State. Like, those are the types of things that you're rooting for. But I think right now, I'm pretty comfortable saying that it seems like Ohio State's probably going to be about where they are right now. It seems like they're not going to drop low enough to not host a game in the first round, which was kind of expected. And it might just be about like who that ends up being. Right now, it'd be Tennessee. Which, by the way, as I said, sign me up for that. Now, I want to, well, actually, real quick, before I get to my rant, I want to go to the phones because Jed in Richmond wants to chime in. What's going on, Jed?
Hey, Spencer, congrats on the time slot. It's been a while since I talked to you. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay. Okay, quick story. I went to Virginia Beach with my Michigan fan girlfriend. We went to a Backers Bar, an Ohio State one. There was like 200 Ohio State fans and her. She was the only Michigan fan there.
That wasn't a deal breaker?
Pardon me?
That wasn't a deal breaker?
No, it wasn't. Not at all. We share it. It's all good. Anyway, she's worth it. And I'm an idiot. So I kid you not, after our three and out late in the game, everyone in that entire bar started either sarcastically or genuinely cheering every time Michigan did something well, and they kept the Fire Ryan Day chant going at the same time. They were literally Michigan fans because they wanted him gone. And that tells you where – I know, it was hilarious.
Well, I was at the stadium, Jed. I was at the game, and it was like somebody had just died. Like it was like a funeral in there. People were just like beside themselves. I heard the saddest rendition of "Hang on, Sloopy" that I've ever heard at an Ohio sporting event before. And I think that was like start of the fourth quarter. And I think at that moment is when I knew they were going to lose. I was like, they're not even putting energy in "Hang on, Sloopy" anymore. This game is over. It just felt inevitable at that point.
It was terrific. All right, so the question I have for you is about the playoffs. What, I know, I understand your logic. I don't agree with it, but I understand your logic and how they're doing it now. But why on earth don't they just use the top, other than the four winners of the league, of the conferences, why don't they just use the same rankings as that they do right now? Ohio State would have it would be 6 against an 11 versus the 8 versus
yeah.
9. What?
So,
why do
so
we need
you're
so
saying,
why do we need a human?
Yeah.
Why do we need a human?
So wait, I think what you're alluding to, Jed, is the idea that like the conference with the top four conference winners get a bye. Is that kind of what you're hinting at? Because that's the big wrench that gets thrown in, is that Boise State right now is slated to be like the fourth highest potential conference winner, along with SMU, and it's like your ACC and Mountain West winners. And so those two teams get rewarded by getting bye weeks. But really, it should be that, like, and this is the big problem I think that people brought up when the playoff was first kind of unveiled, is that it should just be that you get an auto bid if you win your conference, but that you don't get an auto buy. And so that, I think, is kind of what you're hinting at. It's like, it still should be like the top four teams get the buys no matter what conference they're from, rather than just giving it to a team like Boise State or SMU, who are, I would imagine, inferior opponents, and just because they won conferences that we consider inferior.
Okay, so that's about exactly correct, except for the fact that all they're doing is throwing a human in there to try to make, you know, cuter matchups or whatever. Why don't we just go straight through it? And I don't even care if they keep the four conference winners as the four buys and just fill in the rest with the top 12 that are there. You know, everyone decides those four.
The reason I bring up the conference winners thing is because that's basically what they did. Like like Ohio State is number 6 in the rankings, but they're number 8. They're the 8th seed in the bracket because that's how the bracket kind of plays itself out. Like once you go down the list.
That's the part I have a problem with, though. If they just did 6-11, 5-12, other than the four that won the conference, why don't we just do that? It's like it would be exactly like the basketball tournament, which is much smarter. Because basketball, I mean, I know there's a human element there, But there shouldn't be a human element
right.
in this.
But so, Jed, real quick, just to clarify one more time. Yeah. We're saying the same thing, but in order for them to do it that way, they would need to eliminate the conference winners all the conference winners, the top conference winners having buys. Because
who do you think? If you're looking at the majority of the country, which way say they do that? Which way do you think would be more supported?
I think the way that you're describing would be, and what we're both sort of talking about, because because here's the thing. Like, if you just did it based off of the seeding, the top four seeds right now would be Oregon, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame. And so then that would set you up to then do like, okay, Georgia's 5, they're playing 12. Ohio State's 6, they're playing 11. So that's why I'm saying you'd have to get rid of the conference winners getting automatic buys, even like for conferences like the ACC that doesn't have teams ranked higher than the Big Ten and the SEC. Does that make sense?
Well, maybe. Yeah, it does, and maybe I'm just being an Ohio State honk, but quite honestly, you know, we're going to get screwed. If we were 6 right now and they did it the way we're talking about, we'd play the 11, which would not be 10 and 6.
Well, but in the same vein, Jed, they're going to get screwed because they didn't beat Michigan. So all they had to do was do that. And
I totally agree. I totally agree.
They would have been okay. Anyway, man, appreciate the call. Thanks.
Yep.
What Jed is describing is the exact thing that people have brought up time and time again this year about the setup of the playoff. And it might be the biggest thing that they look to change going into year two. But along those lines, I've heard so many people. I think we had like one of those one of the Odyssey Sports Minutes or whatever the hell they are, or the Infinity Sports Minutes now. And I don't remember who it was, but I heard it earlier today. Somebody was like on a rant about how they should have kept the 14 playoff for this year specifically because there's just not 12 teams that are deserving. And I just can't wrap my head around why we are so obsessed with declaring who is the most deserving and having a chance to win a college football championship rather than just letting out on the field. That's the whole reason we got here, is because humans tried to decide, well, these are the four most deserving teams every single year, and it didn't work, and that left teams like Florida State last year and Ohio State in certain years and other teams out certain years that maybe did deserve a chance to at least prove themselves. In every other sport, like in the NFL, there's going to be some like 9-8 NFC South team that makes the playoff. And we're all going to be like, well, how does that team get in a bad division? And I get why people are going to say that. But guess what? If they don't belong there, they're going to get a chance to prove it because they're going to play the game on the field. It's here. Does he get in after losing Michigan? Maybe not in the eyes of some people, but they did enough throughout their season, despite having losses, to have a chance to play in it. And they're going to get to prove to you if the Michigan game was a fluke or if Michigan's just in their head or if they're still a legitimate national title contender. And that's what's going to be. Like, we can't keep doing this thing where we're like, really only four teams deserve to be in when every other sport, all these teams get in and sometimes maybe they aren't deserving, but we let it play out on the damn field. That was the entire point of expanding it. That was the entire point of going to 12. And I said from the beginning, if the goal is still to get the four best teams in there, 12-team playoff accomplishes that. The 12-team playoff covers your bases enough that you will get the four best teams in there. Maybe in the eyes of some, certain teams aren't as deserving. Fine, whatever. It's a biased practice anyway. That's the whole reason of expanding to 12 and letting it play on the field, because you can't now have a UCF situation where they go undefeated and they're like, well, we didn't even get a shot at playing in the playoff against Alabama, so how do we know we wouldn't have won? They probably wouldn't have, but they go around and get to jokingly parade that they were national champions that one year because of that situation. Now you eliminate that. Boise State is going to get in. They're going to get a chance to prove themselves with the big boys of college football and see if they can make some noise in the playoff. And that's what we all wanted from the start. So spare me the woe is me tears about teams that aren't deserving getting in the playoff. So what if the team has 2 losses? Every sport, there's teams there's teams going into the playoff undefeated. I mean, what the hell are we doing? We only do this with college football, and it's such a backwards mindset. It's people who can't get out of the past, and they're living in a bygone era now because they don't like NIL, and they don't like the college football playoff experience and all these different things, and they just can't get over the fact that their precious college football season now, I guess, quote-unquote, means less because, well, now you don't have to go undefeated to make the playoff. Who cares? If the idea is to get the best teams in there and declare a true national champion, shouldn't the field be expanded? Shouldn't they have to prove it on the field? That's what this gives us. So give me a damn break with all this. I'm so sick of the... We're now a full year, a full season into this and deciphering this and figuring these things out. And it's just people looking back at 2023 being like, oh, I missed the four-team era when you had to really earn it back in the day. Like, come on, guys. Come on. What are we doing? We argued for this. We wanted this. What's wrong with more college football? And my biggest argument with football, by the way... I get into this with my friends all the time. I think college football, when you get two teams on the same playing field that are like evenly matched, it's way more exciting. Like the Georgia game the other night against Georgia Tech. Somehow those two teams ended up evenly matched. That game was awesome. When you get two evenly matched teams, it's better than the NFL. And so we're getting more of that now. And the idea here is the playoff, these teams should be more evenly matched. So let's have some fun with it and enjoy it instead of looking back and being like, well, maybe they started the 12-team playoff too early because there's at least six teams in here that aren't even really deserving. So why did what this system's already stinks? Like, come on, guys. We haven't even given it a chance yet. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. We can't argue for like the same people that are arguing for like why this team got left out every year are the same people now who are like, well, the regular season doesn't mean anything. Sure seemed like it meant something to Ohio State the other day that they lost to Michigan again. Even though everybody said that the rivalry was dead now and it wasn't going to matter, still mattered. They now have a more difficult path to the college football playoff, and Michigan takes solace in beating them again for a fourth straight year. Let's take a break. When we get back, our Browns insider, Daryl Ryder, joins us from Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, Cavaliers in action. We'll talk about that game tonight, but I want to pick Daryl's brain about what happened last night on the football field out in Denver between the Browns and the Broncos and much, much more here on 92.3 The Fan.